Such a personality as Srinivasa Acharya Dhan. Where are my Sarup Damodara and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatana? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where are my Raghunath Bhatta and Gopala Bhatta? And where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees, in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das simply weeps. Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 3, Chapter 8. Meditation or having a hard time reading today. Manifestation of Brahma from Garbho Dakshayi Vishnu. Today we're reading text 3 through 5. So word meanings for the first verse. Asinam, seated. Urvyam, in the bottom of the universe. Bhagavantam, unto the Lord. Adyam, the original. Sankarshanam, Sankarshan. Devam, the personality of Godhead. Akunta Sattvam, undeterred knowledge. Vivitsava, being inquisitive to know. Tattvam Ataha, truth like this. Parasya, regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kumara, the boy saint. Mukya, headed by. Munaya, great sages. Andapritchan, inquired like this. Asinamurvyam Bhagavantam Adyam.
Asinamurvyam Bhagavantam Adyam.
Sankarshanam Devam Akunta Sattvam.
Sankarshanam Devam Akunta Sattvam.
Vivitsavastattvamata Parasya.
Vivitsavastattvamata Parasya.
Kumaramukhya Munayon Bhapritchan. Asinamurvyam Bhagavantam Adyam.
Asinamurvyam Bhagavantam Adyam.
Sankarshanam Devam Akunta Sattvam.
Sankarshanam Devam Akunta Sattvam.
Vivitsavastattvamata Parasya.
Vivitsavastattvamata Parasya.
Kumaramukhya Munayom Bhapritchan. Translation. Some time ago, being inquisitive to know, Sanat Kumar, the chief of the boy saints, accompanied by other great sages, inquired exactly like you about the truths regarding Vasudeva, the Supreme, from Lord Sankarshan, who is seated at the bottom of the universe. Purport. This is in clarification of the statement that the Lord spoke directly on the Srimad Bhagavatam. When and unto whom the Bhagavatam was spoken is explained herewith. Questions similar to those put forward by Vidura were asked by great sages like Sanat Kumar and Lord Sankarshan. The plenary expansion of the Supreme Lord Vasudeva answered them. So in the previous chapter, Vidura asked many questions of Maitreya, and Maitreya is going to answer by referring to another conversation in which the Kumars and other sages had a personal audience of Lord Sankarshan at the bottom of the ocean, and he replied. So he's going to be the source. So this, we'll hear, I guess we haven't heard it yet, right? He explains something is coming up. Maitreya explains his parampara, how he was able to receive this knowledge. So one thing we can note is that their Bhagavatam is... Actually, we have a particular conception, maybe the Bhagavatam that we study, of course, but any glorification of Krishna or discussion of the Absolute Truth or Bhagavan, that's Bhagavatam. So it can come in different forms and presented in different ways in different times. Even this Bhagavatam, I was thinking, we think of it, Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam. So you might, when you hear that, you might think, well, he'll just sit down and just speak, just say the whole thing. But what is it? It's actually a conversation. And in many ways, Pariksha Maharaj is the one who's driving the way it flows because of his questions. So it's not, in some sense you can think it's not a set thing. He's talking about the Absolute Truth, but there are so many different aspects, there are unlimited aspects of the Absolute Truth. So the way it's being presented by Shukadeva Goswami is even, you can say, one kind of presentation. There's not only one Bhagavatam. So the next verse, Swame Vadishnyam Bahumanayantam Yadvasudevabhidam Amananti Pratyagvita Shambhujakoshamishad Unmilayantam Viputodhayaya. At that time, Lord Sankarshan was meditating upon his Supreme Lord, whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudeva. But for the sake of the advancement of the great learned sages, he slightly opened his lotus-like eyes and began to speak. Text 5. Svadhunyudadhrai svajata kalapai upaspushantas charanopadhanam padmam yarachantya hirajakanya sapremananavalibhirvarata. The sages came from the higher planets down to the lower region through the water of the Ganges, and therefore the hair on their heads was wet. They touched the lotus feet of the Lord, which are worshipped with various paraphernalia by the daughters of the Serpent King when they desire good husbands. This verse always strikes me that their hair was wet, because you think when they travel like this, they do it in some mystical way. So you think, well, maybe they do it without touching the water exactly. But apparently, at least when they come out, they have to go through the actual water, come out of the actual water. So their hair is wet. And there's this word here, jata, swajata. Chata means like dreadlock. You know, specifically, how the sages wear their hair, just kind of twisted up and with a knot on the top. That's the kind of hair they have. Bunch, Prabhupada translates a bunch of hairs. So the bunch of hairs on their head were, it was wet from the water when they traveled. So the Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Ganges water flows directly from the lotus feet of Vishnu, and its course runs from the highest planet of the universe down to the lowest. The sages came down from Satyaloka by taking advantage of the flowing water, a process of transportation made possible by the power of mystic yoga. If a river flows thousands and thousands of miles, a perfect yogi can at once transport himself from one place to another simply by dipping in its water. The Ganges is the only celestial river which flows throughout the universe, and great sages travel all over the universe via this sacred river. The statement that their hair was wet indicates that it was directly moistened by the water originating from the lotus feet of Vishnu, the Ganges. Whoever touches the water of the Ganges to his head surely touches the lotus feet of the Lord directly and can become free from all sinful, from all effects of sinful acts. If after taking a bath in the Ganges or being washed of all sins, a man guards himself against committing further sinful acts, then certainly he is delivered. But if he again takes up sinful activities, his bath in the Ganges is as good as that of the elephant, who nicely takes his bath in a river, but later spoils the whole thing by covering himself with dust on the land. So Sankarshan, he is lying at the bottom of the ocean. It says he's meditating on his Lord. So of course we think of Sankarshan also as the Lord. In fact, there's a chapter in the fifth canto, The Glories of Lord Ananta. That's Sankarshan. It's the same personality, Lord Ananta or Lord Sankarshan. In fact, I'm going to read a little something. Oops, let's see if I can find it in my notes here. I have it. There are some. Oh, looks like I left it behind. Anyway, at the beginning of the fifth, I think it's, what is it, the 25th chapter? One of the last chapters of the fifth canto. There's glorification of Lord Sankarshan. So he's Ananta Shesha. In one place, now Ananta Shesha, of course, he's an expansion of Lord Balaram. We have Shesha and Ananta Shesha, different names for different forms of the same personality. And one place Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that the Shesha expansion of Lord Balaram, that is his slippers and his couch and, you know, different paraphernalia of his, he says that these are Vishnu Tattva. That form of the Lord, that expansion is Vishnu Tattva. But he says Ananta is Jiva Tattva, Shakti Avesh Jiva Tattva, which is quite amazing when you think of it, because Ananta is Ananta. He's unlimited. He has unlimited heads. So I thought it was quite amazing when I heard Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati explain that. So anyway, so here this is just setting the scene. Typical kind of thing where it actually reminds me of the prayers by the personified Vedas. We have this person, actually Narada goes, I won't retrace it, but it goes like several levels, three or four different levels before we get to the actual conversation where the personified Vedas are glorifying the Lord as he wakes up. So here we have the, in order to answer the question, Maitreya is going to refer to this conversation of the Kumaras and Lord Sankarshan. So I'm not going to go on much with this. I want to speak more about Jayananda Prabhu especially. By the way, any of you who have any memory of Jayananda Prabhu, especially anything you'd like to say, especially those who had his association, at the end of class we can say something about him, glorification of him. Now I'm also supposed to speak about Lord Nrisimhadev today for a few minutes. My assignment was the ninth chapter of the seventh canto. Now the ninth chapter is the prayers of Lord to Lord Nrisimhadeva by Prahlad Maharaj. Some ways you can say this is the most important part of the whole, all the many chapters dealing with this pastime of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada loved this chapter. First time I went to India was in 1976 for the Gaur Purnima festival, Mayapur Vrindavan festival, and Prabhupada spoke every day. And he chose that chapter of the Bhagavatam to speak on, prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. And I heard at one point, Prabhupada was with his leaders in his room, and he said, "Isn't it wonderful, Prahlad Maharaj, how he, such a small boy, has composed these beautiful prayers glorifying the Lord?" So he very much appreciated those prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. So what I'm going to do is just, I'm just going to read through a list. First of all, the prayers, there are 43 verses, actually, that he speaks. In the beginning, he said, you know, the context is that Nrsimhadeva is still very agitated. He can't calm down. He's very, very angry. And he's killed Hiranyakashipu and killed all his, so many demon followers of his, asuras. But still, he's burning with rage. And everyone's afraid. They're just kind of standing back. But they can't calm him down. Even Lakshmi is afraid. That's her husband. I've never seen him like this before. So she's afraid to approach him. So Lord Brahma, he asks Prahlad, maybe you can calm him down. He came for your benefit, for your sake. You're the one that made him mad like this, some ways. So maybe you can calm him down. So Prahlad begins by saying, it's amazing that I'm the one speaking this, because who am I compared to all these great personalities? He very takes a humble position. But it's like, well, I'll try. So of course he offers these wonderful prayers. So 43 verses he speaks. So I picked, I don't know how many there are. These are all ones that I consider famous verses. Now, they may be famous just in my mind, I don't know. But I think Prabhupada quoted all of these particular verses from Prahlad's prayers. And so I'm just going to read through them. I hope it doesn't take too long. Maybe I should just read the transcript. But the transcript's so nice, I don't want to skip it. Yasmat priya priya viyoga samyoga janma. Actually, the first one is just one line. Modeta sadura privishchika sarpa hatya. This means, since even saintly persons take pleasure in killing of a scorpion or a snake. So that's where that comes from. We've probably heard that before. So Prahlad, he spoke that in text 14. So, maybe I'll just read the first line. So I think otherwise it may take too long. So this next verse, 17. Yasmat priya priyoga viyoga janma. Sayoga janma. So one famous line is Dukaushadam tadapi dukam matadhyaham. So anyway, I'll tell you what that is in the translation. So the verse goes, O Great One, O Supreme Lord, because of contact with displeasing circumstances and separation from pleasing circumstances, one is placed in a most regrettable position on heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. So that's the line I read. Dukkha Oshadam. You know, Oshada means medicine. The medicine for the dukkha, tadapi dukkham, is as bad as the disease itself and the material, all material suffering. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. So then, Balasya Neha Sharanam Pitaro Nrsimha. My Lord Nrsimhadeva, O Supreme, because of a bodily conception of life, embodied souls neglected and not cared for by you cannot do anything for their betterment. Whatever remedies they accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, are certainly impermanent. For example, a father and mother cannot protect their child, a physician and medicine cannot relieve a suffering patient, and a boat on the ocean cannot protect a drowning man. Then text 28, Evam janam nipatitam prabhavahi kupe. And especially the last line, Soham katam nuvishvijay tavabritya sevam. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my association with material desires one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes, following the general populace. This verse is so graphic. I think it's bad enough to fall into a well, but then it's full of snakes when you get there too. Whew. That's how he characterizes material life. But your servant Narada Muni kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? That's the verse about our indebtedness to the Guru. Then, etam nitya grishi deva jashavatara. The last line of this verse is channa kaloya dabavastri gota saptam. So this is a Tri Yuga verse. I remember I had been studying these verses before I went to Mayapur that year, so I was familiar with this verse. And when Prabhupada was giving class day by day on, through these verses, and it just happened on Gaur Purnima he spoke on this verse. Or at least I thought, oh, what a coincidence. Then later I realized it probably wasn't a coincidence. I'm sure it was planned that way. They started in a certain place so that they would end up with that verse on Gaur Purnima. So Prabhupada spoke on it, of course. So this is a translation. In this way, my Lord, you appear in various incarnations as a human being, an animal, a great saint, a demigod, a fish, or a tortoise, thus maintaining the entire creation and different planetary systems and killing the demoniac principles. According to the age, O my Lord, you protect the principles of religion. In the age of Kali, however, you do not assert yourself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore you are known as Tri Yuga, or the Lord who appears in three yugas. That's text 38. This is text 43. This one may be the one Prabhupada quote. He quoted this quite a bit, I think. Naivodvije paraduratjaya vaitaranyas tvadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chitta shocetato vimukacheta sa indriyarta maya sukhaya bharamudvahato vimudhan. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My only concern is for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their family societies and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. So this verse and the next one are really show Prahlad Maharaj's compassion. Which is also one the Prabhupada quoted. Prayena deva munaya swavimukta kama. My dear Lord Nrisimhadeva, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance, not caring for the big cities and towns. They go to the Himalayas or the forests to meditate with vows of silence, mauna vritta. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to shelter at your lotus feet. So Prahlad, of course, was a perfect example of compassion, and Srila Prabhupada was a perfect example of following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. His compassion was, of course, one of his great qualities. Interestingly, I think is it one of these verses, it says, Prabhupada says in the purport, that Prahlad Maharaj was a mixed Nitya Siddha and Sadhana Siddha. And I was reading the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to this section. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that means that he's a Nitya Siddha, but he came and practiced Sadhana Bhakti. So in this life, so that's why it's said that he's a mixed, because he demonstrated sadhana bhakti. So, because I was always thinking, well, what does that mean, mixed sadhana and nitya siddha? So that was the way Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained it. So in this verse, this is the last, oh, there's my sankarshan I was looking for. All right. Anyway, so this, another famous one, Prabhupada quoted quite a bit. Yanmai tunari grihamedi sukkamituchyam. Sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedis, so-called grihasthas, who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. Kripanas, the fools who are just the opposite of brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are dhira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching, are not subjected to the suffering of fools and rascals. So let me just read this one. I had several verses about Lord Sankarshan, but I'll just read this one. Yeah, 525. So this is the first verse of 525. Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, "My dear king, approximately 240,000 miles beneath the Patala planet lives another incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the expansion of Lord Vishnu, known as Lord Ananta or Lord Sankarshan. He is always in the transcendental position, but because he is worshipped by Lord Shiva, the deity of Tamoguna, or darkness, he is sometimes called Tamasi. Lord Ananta, or Lord Sankarshan, is the predominating deity of the material mode of ignorance, as well as the false ego of all conditioned souls. When a conditioned living being thinks, 'I am the enjoyer and this world is meant to be enjoyed by me,' this conception of life is dictated to him by Sankarshan. Thus the mundane conditioned soul thinks himself the Supreme Lord." So I'll just read this next short one. "This great universe situated on one of Lord Anantadev's thousands of hoods appears just like a white mustard seed. It is infinitesimal compared to the hood of Lord Ananta." So not is it, it's even smaller than a mustard seed. Infinitesimal compared to his side. Of course, his head is infinite, so I guess everything that's less than infinite is infinitesimal, right? So now, on to Jaya Ananda Prabhu. One reason I'm giving class today, because I was fortunate to have his association. I went to the temple for the first time in San Francisco. I was in the military, I was an officer, and I was stationed in Sacramento. So I got a reservoir of pleasure and I went to the temple in San Francisco, about 80 miles away. But I came just a few, in early June, I guess it was 1974, it was just a few weeks before Prabhupada was coming for the Rath Yatra Festival in San Francisco. So as soon as I came, I basically became a devotee right away, and I started coming to the temple whenever I could. I think I took a little leave, too, so I could come more than just the weekends. So what happened when I came to the temple, because Jayananda Prabhu and his crew were working on the Rath Yatra cart, so they sent me over there to work with him. So right away, I got Jayananda Prabhu's association. And especially, he was going out to get supplies here and there. And I was traveling and riding in his truck with him. Jayananda had his vahana, his carrier, like the demigods all have their carriers. So he had this international, I think the International Harvester is a company. It was a step van, like the UPS trucks. It was red. And so I spent a lot of time with him riding around in this truck and throwing things in the back and so on. So, of course it was wonderful. I was a new devotee and he was preaching to me and talking a lot about Prabhupada. That's one thing I picked up. Because when I first came, the very first day I went to the temple, devotees were talking to me for hours because I came there too early. I didn't know what time the feast was. And so they kept referring to this prapa. I think, what? Huh? Who's this prapa they keep talking? I couldn't hear what they were saying exactly. So of course I came to know it was Prabhupada. And Jayananda Prabhu, of course, he had so much devotion for Srila Prabhupada. He was completely surrendered to him. So he was speaking a lot about him. Prabhupada said, and Prabhupada did this, and Prabhupada. So that of course that was very nice. Now Jayananda Prabhu, he was the old man of the temple. He was 35 years old. And I was 23, so he was 12 years older than me. Most of the devotees were in their early 20s. I don't think there were any other older devotees, at least in our temple at that time. So at 35 years old, he was, he was the elder. And he was definitely, devotees looked up to him. And of course, we heard this morning after Mangalarti how humble he was. It was one of his great qualities. He was very humble. But devotees, they certainly looked up to him. And what he was doing at that time, of course, he would take time off to work on Rath Yatra, which, by the way, was extremely austere work to do. And he told me, actually, when I was working with him that first year, he said, I don't know if I can keep doing this. He said, this may be my last year. He said, I'm starting to feel old, essentially. So already then, apparently there were some symptoms. You know, he had cancer, and at the end, he had these huge growths all over his body, especially his armpits. He had like big tennis ball size tumors. These were starting to manifest. He worked on that Rocky Ashram in New York, and he was really, really in bad shape. So even then, apparently, he was starting to feel some fatigue from something was wrong with his body. But he did keep working, and it was really austere. San Francisco, even though it's not a very, the climate there is not very nice. The cold fog comes in, and it gets really cold and to the bone chilling. You know? So he would stay there at night and with other devotees. For one thing, they wanted to protect the cart, so they had to stay over there and just work like anything for weeks. Now we have, I was talking to Ratnabhushana recently, and he says they have, essentially they have Ratiyatra kits now. They're prefab, and he's actually selling them to different temples. He told me he would sold one to some temple in Europe, shipping it over, the Ratiyatra. So, but back then, every year it was practically built from scratch. And they used to store it up in Marin County at some devotee's farm. But a lot of these huge beams and these huge wheels, those wheels were made out of wood, very solid wooden wheels, but they weighed a ton. It took five people just to lift them up to get them onto the axle of the carts. That's why Jayananda Prabhu wanted to replace those. You may know that story. In San Francisco, he decided one year he's going to make metal wheels with spokes, because these things are just too hard to deal with. So it just happened, Krishna sent someone to help him. This man, he really wasn't so interested in Krishna consciousness, but he happened to be a welder, and Jayananda needed a welder, so Krishna sent him a welder. And this man, in fact, Jayananda Prabhu would give him some money to do the work, and Jayananda knew that he was going and buying beer, you know, drinking and then coming and working on the rough, on the rough wheels. Maybe that's why they didn't work out, actually. What happened was, actually, by the way, the San Francisco temple had been a mortuary, and next to it was a big garage where they parked their purses. So inside there, you may see sometimes in warehouses they have like a room that's sort of just built in the side, and it's not as high as the ceiling sometimes, so it has a little, like a flat top roof that's inside the building, so a little loft-like area. So that's where Jayananda Prabhu was living. When I knew him there in San Francisco, he was living in that little loft inside this, it had a wooden floor, as I remember. It was covered with grease because they all took care of cars there and so much work went on there. So anyway, this man that came, he was working on the wheels there for, I don't know how long it was, quite some time. So during the Ratiyatra, did he finish, or was maybe this was in 75? Now I'm forgetting. It was 75, I think. It was 75 that the wheels didn't work. So what happened during the festival? Now you know, Prabhupada would always ride on Subhadra's cart, and they didn't. He only completed the sets of wheels for Balaram and Jagannath's carts. So on the day of the festival, Srila Prabhupada was sitting on Subhadra's cart. But Balaram's and Subhadra's carts with the new spoked wheels, the you know, between every wheel is supposed to be like an arch. But what happened was the weight was too much and it just flattened out. Between every spoke, it just went flat. So the carts were ba-boom, 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 the whole way, the whole parade, the Ratiyatra Festival in 75. I think it was 75, yeah. But Prabhupada was on Subhadra's cart, so he had a smooth ride. But actually, Prabhupada had warned, Jayananda Prabhu had written a letter to Prabhupada and telling him what he was going to do. And Prabhupada had said, I don't know, I'm a little concerned about this. Those original wheels were very solid. But Jayananda Prabhu didn't get the letter in time. And so exactly what Prabhupada predicted, it didn't work out. So then Jayananda was determined that he was going to make some good spoke wheels, metal wheels. So he did in New York. I was richly reading a conversation. They were talking to Prabhupada, some devotees were talking to Prabhupada about how he had made some really solid wheels. He put some bracing in between the spokes or whatever. So they worked out for the New York Rath Yatra. He didn't have to deal with those really, really heavy wooden wheels. So in any case, Jayananda Prabhu was, he had so many wonderful qualities. I wrote an editorial about him one time, a couple of years ago. And one of the things I pointed out was my overall conception of Jayananda Prabhu was that he was naturally a Vaishnava. He was very comfortable, you could say, as a Vaishnava. It was almost like he wasn't working at it. It wasn't, you know, difficult for him, you might say, in certain ways. Especially to be a Vaishnava in public. Because as I went around with him, I saw how he was so natural in saying Hare Krishna to people and talking to people about Krishna. And people were, he was, you know, such a real down-to-earth guy that people really liked him. He made so many friends. I'm sure you may have read some of the stories. There was this one man we would buy bananas. It's funny because one of Jayananda Prabhu's solutions to feeding the hungry workers on the Rath Yatra site was bananas and buttermilk. That became kind of a tradition. I was one of the people who organized Rath Yatras in subsequent years, and we would do that too, because bananas are pretty cheap. Actually, one of the cheapest things you can buy. And Jayananda Prabhu especially had a connection in the wholesale produce market, where devotees would, you know, buy produce for the temple. There was one banana merchant there named Banana King Louie. So he was a friend of Jayananda Prabhu's. So Jayananda Prabhu would go there and, you know, get bananas and then go to Albertson's and get the buttermilk and stuff everyone full of that. Because another problem was, because especially when in 75, the temple had moved to Berkeley. So working over in San Francisco, prasadam wasn't always on time because they had to bring it across the bay from Berkeley. So it took a little time. So sometimes the workers would get a little, you know, because he would recruit people from anywhere off the street and get them to work to help out. So they would get a little grouchy sometimes. So Jayananda's solution was fill them up with bananas and buttermilk. From Banana King Louie. So he was one of Jayananda's admirers, this Banana King Louie. And there were others like him too. Just these, you know, rough San Francisco working class, blue collar guys, you know. But they really appreciated him just as a person and Hare Krishna. One thing Jayananda Prabhu used to do became a tradition. Well, he did, I don't know if they did, but they might have done it later, because some of the devotees who were close to Jayananda Prabhu, they tried to carry on some things. But when you traveled into San Francisco from the airport, from the San Francisco airport, there was one big, like, flat hillside. And it was very prominent as you were driving in. So every year, Jayananda Prabhu would go up there with, I guess he would use, like they do in the on the football fields, or the line the bases, what they call it, liars, whatever it is. That white stuff, whatever that white powder is. He would go up there on that hillside and make a big sign. It would say, Hare Krishna, GG Park, and then whatever the date was. That was his, you know, that was his advertisement. Now, of course, the Rath Yatra was famous. People knew about it. It was in Golden Gate Park every year. Started there in 1967. That first year, of course, Jayananda Prabhu was also, of course, he collected a lot of money for it and also helped build the carts. And they went all the way from the beginning of the park all the way to the ocean, which was a long ways, actually. It was a long, these devotees were really into chanting. They used to, you see, it was more common, you might say, long kirtans. Now we have our festivals. But even at the temple, the kirtans were longer. I was watching last night a DVD of that series of DVDs of memoirs. And Brahmananda Prabhu was talking about Prabhupada chanting in Tompkins Square Park. And Brahmananda Prabhu said he got up to dance himself. And he said, and as I was dancing, I was thinking, well, as long as Prabhupada is singing, I need to keep dancing. But he said, but Prabhupada chanted for 3 hours. So he had to dance for 3 hours. So imagine Prabhupada chanted that same tune, you know, the Prabhupada tune, for 3 hours straight. Imagine, huh? We have our festivals and we have all these beautiful melodies that keep us entertained. But just that melody over and over and over again for 3 hours, that's quite amazing. And devotees were there chanting along with him, of course. So, of course, that's another thing about Jayananda Prabhu. He loved to chant. Like we heard this morning, how he loved prasadam, all aspects of it. Actually, when I was in Vrindavan a couple of years ago, there's this, I don't know where it comes from, this idea that Jayananda loved peanut butter halwa. I don't remember that connection with him, but it's nice. He liked halwa, I know that. So they cooked, in Vrindavan, they cooked peanut butter halwa. And boy, was it good. It was so delicious. So he liked to serve prasadam, of course, eat prasadam, honor prasadam, cook prasadam. And in fact, there was a time when I first moved into the temple, I was able to move in, get out of the Air Force, right at the end of January 1975. In fact, Jayananda Prabhu came and picked me up at the Air Force Base. And he didn't take me directly to the San Francisco Temple. He took me to the devotees who were doing Sankirtan in a town just north of San Francisco, a city there. So one thing I remember about that was when we got there, Jayananda Prabhu, we were driving into the motel where devotees were staying, and he saw this orange tree on the side of the road. And he got all excited. He said, "Oh, look at that." So after, I think he dropped me off and he went back and he went and picked all the oranges he could because he loved getting free stuff. That was definitely part of Jayananda Prabhu's attitude. So I forget, I was starting to say something else. I forgot what it was. Anyway, I actually want to open this up. I don't want to just talk about my experiences. But I specifically asked Hare Krishna. Prabhu, I forgot your name. It's slipping my mind.
Where is it?
Maharaj, sorry, Maharaj. How could I forget his name? Maharaj Das Prabhu was at the San Francisco temple when I joined. So he's an old San Francisco devotee who had Jayananda Prabhu's association. So I asked him if he would say something. So you can give him the microphone, and others too can speak after he speaks.
Hare Krishna. Met Jayananda in 1972. I met Jayananda in 1972. Actually, a friend of mine actually met Jayananda at Cost Plus in Sacramento, import and export store, where he where there was the Spiritual Sky Incense. So Jayananda, I mean, really, he did everything in San Francisco, which, let's go there first, because he did so much. He was the pujari. He took the trash out. He went to get the deity flowers. The boga. And when there wasn't anybody to do pujari, like I said, he'd be the go-to guy. He was the temple president at some point. And he went out on Sankirtan. He's the first one that took me out in the lots when I moved into the temple. And he's the first one that took me to the airport to distribute big books at the airport in San Francisco. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So in this way, we saw Jayananda as the pillar of, and everybody like Naga Prabhu mentioned that we just loved and respected Jayananda. He was very humble, but at the same time we knew that he was not an ordinary devotee. We knew that he was mature, he was responsible, but very humble. And we loved him. And going back to when I first met Jayananda, my friend met Jayananda at the Cost in Sacramento at this import-export store. He invited Jayananda for dinner. So he comes back when he came back home, to his home, he tells me he's extremely excited. I mean, there's a whole lot of in-between stuff going on, so, but I can go on and on. But anyway, he was extremely excited. He met devotees, which we had been trying to meet devotees. And there were none in Sacramento at that time. And so we're at his house. Jayananda's coming for dinner. And my friend says, okay, I'm going to go get the boga, and I want you to stay here just in case he comes while I'm gone. So it so happened Jayananda came while he was gone. So I opened the door, and there's the Jayananda, big Jayananda, you know, well over 6 foot, you know, 6 foot four, something like this, with a smile, you know. So he comes in the house, and immediately he starts not immediately, but very soon, where he could see I was kind of spaced out. I had an Isha Upanishad. That's another story. But I had an Isha Upanishad. And he starts going over the invocation, trying to teach me the invocation. So shortly after that, my friend comes back from, with the boga, and Jayananda immediately goes to the kitchen, takes the boga. He's invited for dinner. He takes the boga, and he starts cooking, going in the kitchen, and he's standing, and my wife likes this part, so I'll have to show you. That he's, we're looking around the corner, and Jayananda, because this is our first devotee we met, and we're looking around, you know, looking at to see what he's doing. And so he's cooking on his four-burner stove, and he's standing, I can't do it, on one leg like this, and he's cooking, has these things going. And we thought that was far out. So, and then after he's done, we go, immediately go, we had our pictures, a little altar, and we started kirtan. We chanted, and we were dancing. We were up going, you know, jumping in like that. And Jayananda was leading us. So, like that, this is how I met Jayananda. And for the first several months, he was coming through Sacramento. So he'd stop off at our house. We'd have a feast like that. And one incident which sticks to my mind was I could see, because I'm not very smart. I'm not very intellectual. And I was despondent, and I was telling Jayananda we were going to get something, boga or something. It's me and him in a car in Sacramento. And I was telling Jayananda, I says, you know, Jayananda Prabhu, I don't think I can cut it, you know. And then Jayananda immediately tells me the story of the illiterate Brahmin in South India. And I just look at Jayananda and I go, okay, you know. So he's, in this way, he's inspiring me, always inspiring me. I had the good fortune to be there. He's the first devotee I met. Spent a year and a half in the temple. I got transferred to in San Francisco. Moved in the temple in 1973. So I got that association, which is a whole thing in itself. And the other thing I like to say, that there was things that I could see of Jayananda, and there's things that Jayananda did that we would talk, devotees would talk about later. Like whenever a devotee was sick, for a few, whatever period, he always took him prasadam. I mean, he was known for taking prasadam to devotees that were either sick, physically sick, or sick mentally. They would just, you know, space out and just didn't want to go to the temple. But he'd go and take prasadam to him. And this, you know, so this is sweet. And then, of course, we are the Rath Yatra carts and all that. That was Jayananda. Then I was transferred to to Los Angeles Temple in 75. And there is where, you know, I heard about Jayananda. Shortly after I had a chance, around that time, Jayananda left to join the party, Radha Damodar party. He had a bus. So though he was very humble and meek and very simple, he wasn't a simpleton. He was very smart. He had a degree, an engineering degree. And so in the, anyway, and devotees throughout the movement, particularly Tamal Krishna, wanted him. You know, he asked me several times, come and join me. And Jayananda, he was attached to his service in San Francisco. So anyway, ended up in L.A., and in the L.A., I heard about Jayananda being on the party and Tamal Krishna. And I followed him, kind of. Also, the Rath Yatra, how he built the Rath Yatra cart in New York. And that's another whole wonderful story. There's different stories about him in New York with that Rath Yatra, and how he found out later that he had leukemia. But that's a story, an interesting story, because, and this is Kesha Bharti. He's Maharaj now. He's a householder then. A close friend of Jayananda's, Kesha Bharti Maharaj. So anyway, Kesha Bharti knew that there's something going on with Jayananda. He seemed ill. And this is what he's building the Rath Yatra car. So things are on the road now. So he pulls Jayananda over and he says, you know, probably you seem ill. And Jayananda pulls him over and tells him, okay, I'm going to tell you, but you got to promise you don't tell anybody. And don't tell anybody. So when you see these pictures of Jayananda, when the cart's going in New York, and he's in an ecstasy, you can see. Okay, so the New York Rath Yatra is a success. Prabhupada is happy, like anything. And Jayananda goes to the doctor, the hospital, and they find out that he has, you know, this. Anyway, that's another story in itself, and how he snuck him out of the hospital. And anyway, I'm in L.A., and a lot of this Jayananda told me later, because Jayananda eventually ends up in L.A. But before he was in L.A., he went to San Diego, and it so happens that sometimes I go to San Diego Temple to do sankirtan, distribute, because it's a satellite, kind of a satellite of that Valley Temple. So I was there, and individual's giving class, the phone rings, I go to answer the phone, and am I taking too long? Because I answered the phone in San Diego Temple, I'm there, and it's Jayananda. And he's telling me he's coming to San Diego. Okay, so he flies in, I pick him up. Again, a long story, I gotta cut to the chase, but he ends up in Tijuana doing a lay trail treatment, which is illegal in the US, a treatment for cancer, this cancer. So again, that's another story. But it wasn't successful. Sometimes there was ups and sometimes there was downs. Jayananda just decided not to deal with it anymore. So he ends up in L.A. I end up going back to L.A. to distribute books, which is my home base. And again, Jayananda, that's a whole story. Jayananda go to the site to try to get a Rath Yatra in L.A. So he goes to the authorities, and they're not so keen. They're not ready to jump on, Rath Yatra in L.A. A lot of paperwork, a lot of, money. So Jayananda decides to get it started on his own. He starts to ask, going to different devotees that he knows throughout the movement, asking for donations to buy the wood, I don't know how it all came down eventually, but he got it started. And one story, if I can tell you this, he had this sickness, and he had difficulties one period in L.A. that he almost left his body. So I would decide to go and chant with him in the morning. He was lying out, and I'd just go there and do a few rounds. And it was just me and him in this instance. And I just asked him, I don't like to ask this because it's a pretty serious question. I asked Jayananda, how can I serve you? And he just told me, Maharaj just scribbled Prabhupada's books. So that was mercy. Then shortly after that, he leaves his body and... thank you, Bobby. Let me speak.
I joined in 1976 at the Potomac, Maryland temple during Gaur Purnima. And Jayananda had by that time was already on Tamal Krishna Goswami's bus and Vishnu Janaswami's bus. But that was the year that, they were in India for the Mayapur festival, and neither one of them came back. Everyone was expecting them to come back soon. So it was just Jayananda and then Mahamuni were also in charge of the bus. And I was brand new. I was still not convinced and didn't know much about Krishna consciousness. And I asked him the evening of Gaur Purnima, asked him how he joined the movement, because he was very humble and yet obviously very advanced. And he said that he had been a follower of Timothy Leary. In other words, he had been taking LSD. And then he said he came to a point in his life where he just saw no hope, nothing that interested him or anything. And then he met Prabhupada and everything turned around very much. But he was so humble that, he shared with me that he had been a Kinchana, completely materially exhausted. So I joined on the bus, and so he was kind of like my bhakta leader. I knew bhakta leader whenever there was... I was helping... Bhuta Bhavana was in the kitchen from here, who passed away, I think, earlier this year. But I wasn't going out on book distribution or... Actually, they were collecting a lot, doing incense packs and sending money to the New York temple. And so whenever something happened, so they need to get a new tire or something like that, I was going out with Jayananda. And he told me different things. One thing he told me, he said that he was with Srila Prabhupada riding in a car, and a big truck came by, and it had some gigantic piece of equipment or something wrapped up in a cloth on the back of this big giant truck. And Prabhupada asked him, "What do you suppose is in that cloth?" And he had been an engineer, but he said, "I don't know, Srila Prabhupada. I can't make it out." And Prabhupada said, "I think it's a turbine for an electric power plant." And Jayananda then could see that that's what it was. And he said that was like, he realized that Srila Prabhupada wasn't just some country boy from, he knew everything, he said. But he was very kind to me. And so when we went into D.C. to get some attire or something like that, and I was telling him about... my father had been a school teacher, a physics and math teacher at the Western High School. And he had a friend who was an art teacher. They were helping, it was Vietnam War era, and they were helping the high school students avoid the draft and things like that. They were close friends. And the wife of the artist was, and the artist became a very successful leader of Washington Color School, Leon Berkowitz. And his wife was a poet who wrote poetry about God and perceiving God in nature and everything. And I thought they were very, you know, they had a big wall full of books on Eastern philosophy and everything. And I thought they were very special people. So I told him, oh, you know, nearby here on Kalorama Road, my father's friends are here and they're very advanced people. So he said, okay, let's go there. And I said, you know, maybe they would be embarrassed, you know, that I'm, you know, because I was shaved up and wearing a dhoti and everything like that. And he said, no, they won't, you know, we can just talk to them. They know you, you know. So I said, actually, I would be embarrassed. And then he said, okay, then we won't go. And another time they sent us out for, it was funny because he was really the senior person on the bus, but Mahamuni was he had been like an army, you know, NCO, and he was good at like whipping the devotees up to go out and collect their quotas and stuff like that. He was always like the motivating. But Jayananda was going out, he had a van and he would go out and give lemonade to the guys that were out in different parking lots and things like that. And he was sort of the kindly, fatherly, you know, supporter of everyone. One time they sent us out to collect flowers for Sri Sri Radhadamodar. That was Radhadamodar's bus. For those of you who are newer devotees, we had different buses going around, and some of them had Gornitai deities on them. But one, the original bus was special Radhakrishna deities that are now in Gitanagari, Pennsylvania. And so I was still so new, and we went out early in the morning to get flowers, and Jayananda drove me out to some residential neighborhood and parked a car in Louisville, Kentucky, I think. And I said, what are we doing here? Aren't we going to a flower store? And he said, no, we're going to collect the flowers from the lawns of the people. And I was too new for that. I said, well, the people will be disturbed, you know. He said, don't worry, all the flowers belong to Krishna. And I said, yeah, but the people don't think they belong to Krishna. He said, nevertheless, they'll make advancement by donating their flowers to Krishna. And I said, I still don't feel quite right about it. So he was so kind, and he just said, okay, you stay in the car and read Krishna book, and I'll get the flowers. You know? And that was his character. He was pretty kind like that. I'm trying to think of some other stories, but I think I'll leave it at that for now.
Anyone else burning with something to say? I have a few little things. I'll just end with this. There are recordings. By the way, I already mentioned this. There's one recorded class of Jayananda Prabhu. It was when he was in San Diego. And I have a copy of that. If anybody wants it, you can email me and I'll send it to you. It's an MP3 file. My email is nagaraja.dasa@gmail.com. So here's a little, these things are recorded. You can hear them on the tape. This was at the beginning of, Prabhupada was going to give a lecture on Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Disappearance Day in 1968. So you hear at the beginning, Prabhupada does prima donna, and then the devotees offer obeisances, then Prabhupada says, Hare Krishna. I was thinking, where is Jayananda? Now immediately he has come. Then it says, Jayananda brings a picture of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur. Prabhupada says, ah, Guru Maharaj. Ah, thank you very much. Take care and not fall down. All right. Then there's this little exchange. Prabhupada, I guess Prabhupada had been in India and traveling in Jayananda, but he hadn't seen Jayananda Prabhu for some time. So it says there's sounds of devotees entering, offering obeisances, chanting japa. Prabhupada says, Jayananda, how are you? So you are married now? He did get married. Huh? So where is your marriage presentation? Jayananda, pardon? Prabhupada, when you are not married, you gave me $5,000. Now you are married, you must give me 10,000, double. That's all it's there. And then there's this one. I just love this one. I had this recorded. This is also, this was before an initiation lecture, 1968, Los Angeles. Prabhupada it's the beginning, he says, Jayananda looks like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He starts laughing. Yes, he was tall and stout and strong. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes, very good. Jayananda Prabhu ki jai.